everything was suddenly absolutely right. I felt a surging conviction that this was going to be a good night. Nothing was going to spoil it. After we had said hello, she told me that Dan was running about like a puppy with no trace of a limp, and the news was another wave on the high tide of my euphoria. The only thing that troubled me was the blank, uninhabited appearance of the cinema entrance. "Strange there's nobody here," I said. "It's nearly starting time. I suppose the place is open."
"Must be," said Helen.
"It's open every night but Sunday. Anyway, I'm sure these people are waiting too." I looked round. There was no queue as such, but little groups were standing here and there. A few couples, mostly middle-aged, a bunch of small boys rolling and fighting on the pavement. Nobody seemed worried. And indeed, there was no cause. Exactly 2 minutes before the picture was due to start, a figure in a Macintosh coat pedaled furiously round the corner of the street, head down, legs pistoning, the bicycle lying over at a perilous angle with the ground. He came to a screeching halt outside the entrance, inserted a key in the lock and threw wide the doors. Reaching inside, he flicked a switch, and a single neon strip flickered fitfully above our heads and went out. He did this a few times, and it seemed bent on mischief till he stood on tiptoe and beat it into submission with a masterful blow of his fist. Then he whipped off the Macintosh, revealing faultless evening dress. The manager had arrived. While this was going on, a very fat lady appeared from nowhere and wedged herself into the pay box. The show was ready to roll. We all began to shuffle inside. The little boys put down their ninepences and punched each other as they passed through the curtain into the stalls, while the rest of us proceeded decorously upstairs to the 1 and 6 penny seats in the balcony. The manager, his white shirt front and silk lapels gleaming, smiled and bowed with great courtesy as we passed. We paused at a row of pegs at the top of the stairs while some people hung up their coats. I was surprised to see Maggie Robinson, the blacksmith's daughter, there, taking the tickets, and she appeared to be intrigued by the sight of us. She simpered and giggled, darted glances at Helen, and did everything but dig me in the ribs. Finally, she parted the curtain, and we went inside. It struck me immediately that the management were determined that their patrons wouldn't feel cold, because if it hadn't been for the all-pervading smell of old sofas, we might have been plunging into a tropical jungle. Maggie steered us through the stifling heat to our places, and as I sat down, I noticed there was no arm between the two seats.
"Them's the 14 seats," she blurted out, and fled with her hand to her mouth.
The lights were still on, and I looked around the tiny balcony. There were only about a dozen people, dotted here and there, sitting in patient silence under the plain, distempered walls. By the side of the screen, the hands of a clock stood resolutely at 4:20. But he was all right sitting there with Helen. I felt fine, except for a tendency to gasp like a goldfish in the airless atmosphere. I was settling down cosily when a little man seated in front of us with his wife turned round slowly. The mouth in the haggard face was pursed grimly, and he fixed his eyes on mine in a long, challenging stare. We faced each other for several silent moments before he finally spoke.
"She's dead," he said.
A thrill of horror shot through me.
"Dead?" "Aye, she is. She's dead."
He dragged the word out slowly with a kind of mournful satisfaction, while his eyes still stared into mine. I swallowed a couple of times.
"Well, I'm sorry to hear that. I'm truly sorry."
He nodded grimly and continued to regard me with a peculiar intensity, as though he expected me to say more. Then, with apparent reluctance, he turned away and settled in his seat. I looked helplessly at the rigid back, at the square, narrow shoulders muffled in a heavy overcoat.
Who in God's name was this? And what was he talking about?
I knew the face from somewhere. It must be a client. And what was dead? Cow? You? Sow? My mind began to race over the cases I had seen during the past week, but that face didn't seem to fit in anywhere. Helen was looking at me questioningly, and I managed a wan smile. But the spell was shattered. I started to say something to her, and the little man began to turn again with menacing deliberation. He fixed me once more with a hostile glare.
"I don't think there was ever out wrong with her stomach," he declared.
"Oh, you don't, eh?"
"No, young man, I don't."
He dragged his eyes unwillingly from my face and turned towards the screen again.